nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and a very good evening to you listening to Nationwide. My name is Annie Martin. We are coming to you live from Juba this evening. Today our discussion is going to be focusing on water resource management in the country. Last week, the government launched a consultation on water management in the country, and this was done due to the public concerns over plans to dredge part of River Nile, Nam, and rumors that Jonglei Canal will be revived. So, after this consultation, there were some resolutions that were reached, and I am joined in the studio this evening by two experts who actually gave extensive presentation and also made their recommendations. Our lines will be open to you later on where you can call and be part of our discussions. Our lines are 0912062079 or 0912062950. Those are all our lines. You can call and be part of our discussion. I am joined this evening, like I said, by two experts in that field. First of all, I am joined by Mr. Deng Majok Chol, who is an expert in water resource, and also he's a PhD student. Am I right? Right?
Yes, PhD candidate, yes. University of Oxford.
So you have finished your thesis?
I am.
So what are your thesis all about? Is it focusing on water resources?
Yes, my thesis focuses on water resources, more specifically on the SAT wetland in South Sudan, and the roles of climate change and variability on the SAT waters.
Thank you so much, Majok, and that's Deng Majok Chol. And also we are joined by Professor Taj Al-Kazani, who gave an extensive elaboration on the consultation that was launched here. And I can remember very well, before I welcome him, he said something that remained in my mind up to tomorrow, that anyone who tampers with the Baragazal Basin is committing treason. Good evening and welcome.
Thank you.
So, first of all, tell us more about this very strong statement, the treason statement.
Water is a renewable resource, unlike oil, which is a non-renewable resource. One barrel of oil that you take away is not replaced. It is gone forever. While water comes every year with the season, it stays on top of the ground, it evaporates, comes again, it seeps underground, and it feeds the underground water. The element of treason comes from ignorance. Mm-hmm. People who don't really know what they are doing, they are tampering with these wells. So that was a caution for them to stay away. Thank you.
Okay. So, first of all, let's begin right away from there with the professor. First of all, what are some of the most important aspects that the public must understand on these two issues of cleaning the water, dredging water resources, because it generated a lot of public concerns and it was the hot debate on social media all over the country and beyond our borders?
What I noticed from my presence here and my connection with South Sudan, which was never interrupted since 1972, May 1972, is that there are perceptions, and perceptions would remain reality unless they are removed. I think one of our main problems is those perceptions which are not actually factual. In the absence of solid knowledge, in the absence of a scientific approach, in the absence of confidence in our national and international experts who would tell us what things are, we end up with the confusion that we have now. So if I am to give one piece of advice, is that stay away from perceptions, from any theories, from any advocacy that's not grounded in scientific knowledge. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Deng Majok, first of all, give us your overall view of really what transpired that culminated into this consultation in Juba here. And also, another question people will be asking is that, does the authorities and leaders of this country, do they put more effort in managing our water resources effectively the way it's supposed to be done in other countries? Because water is life and water is scarce in some parts of the country.
Yeah, that is right. Yes, so this began as a response to what was seen as a total confusion in the country in terms of the direction as to what to do with the level of flooding and the flooding crisis that has occurred. And when we realized that there were already some moves as to how to address the flooding, we quickly realized that there was misinformation as to how to control flooding, measures of flooding. Quickly, people jumped to a conclusion that Jonglei Canal could be used as a measure to control such flooding. They also jumped to conclusion that dredging the Nile and deepening the river would also be a solution to flooding. So the flooding became as a pretext, and people did not step back to realize that these two measures may not be effective means of addressing flooding. And since then, different institutions within the government came with different nuance and different approaches to how to address the flooding. So when there were these conflicting messages as to what to do, then this is where both Professor Touch and I, and so many others who are not here on the studio, mm-hmm. stepped up and begin to create awareness. We begin by presenting on Zoom video, also on Clubhouse, and so many other avenues we could find. And there, our voices were heard. There were a number of people who became advocates on these issues. And our message has been very clear that because of climate change and variability and change in weather pattern and climate pattern, so droughts and flooding tend to follow each other. That the country may appear to have more water this year or in the last 3 years, but the climatic change around us in Somalia, in Kenya, in Uganda, and even within South Sudan and within the Chad Basin indicate that there is drought and there is flooding, and they tend to alternate. And so we need to find a better solution to manage our water for the benefit of our citizens first and foremost.
Okay, before we hear from our professor, do you think this public consultation has calmed down the tension, that kind of hot debate on social media and also in public places?
I tend to believe so, and I hope so. Because we have been heard, national experts and international experts came together. We had the opportunity to express to people that our position is that impact assessment, environmental social impact assessment, need to be carried out, that feasibility study before any work is done. I think that is now clear. We are no longer in the debate of whether you belong to one of the camps that were created. I hope we painted a bigger picture, a bigger picture of approaching this comprehensively. We are very concerned about the people in flooding currently.
Yeah.
And we recommended some short measures as to what to do. And so I believe that the temperatures are down now, and that we are approaching this as a country, as people who are concerned about today and tomorrow also.
Yes, Professor Al-Kazini, first of all, there are people right now, I'm sure you might have seen it on social media, immediately after the end of the public consultation here, some citizens in Unity State decided to go and begin cleaning the water. They are not satisfied with the recommendation made here. First of all, what are some of the quick remedies you think, as a professor in this field, that can be taken by the government right now to help those who are staying in flood areas like in Upper Nile region and parts of Barakazal?
Those people who went into the river, which is infested with snakes, watery snakes, and infected with crocodiles, it was a move of despair. But this is not the way to clean the rivers. And we have got pictures where the water hyacinths and the blockage goes for miles and miles as far as you can see. So if those people would like to clean by hand, they will spend the next 10 years doing that. So I would say this is impulsive action that came out of frustration. And other than sympathizing with the people, I will not give it much technical weight.
Yes.
Nobody said that the people should not help. And this will take us from the problem to the mitigation. What we need is to mitigate the effect of the floods, to mitigate the effect of the suffering on the people, those 200,000 people who have been displaced, as a priority, we need to attend to them, and then we turn around and look for the technical remedies for the problem. Thank you.
So now, what are some of the recommendations you think you need to share with our listeners this evening, so that they know that came up from this consultation?
Right. So that I don't defeat my own advocacy and my own beliefs.
Yes.
No action on resources, be it water or otherwise, should be taken without credible, evidence-based feasibility studies. That has been the linchpin of our advocacy. Nobody is against one remedy or the other. Nobody is against one action or the other. We become against it if it is not useful. But as we speak now, all this euphoria, all this equipment that was brought in, all this noise, not one person has done one line of feasibility study to know exactly what happened. And before you know exactly what happens, you cannot actually prescribe a prescription.
Yes. And now, the call for feasibility studies might be in place, but how do you balance it with the immediate needs to protect and save the livelihood of those who are staying in these flood-affected areas?
We have structural defaults. I know South Sudan very well for the last 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And since I came, I have met with scores of people. Managing water resources effectively needs knowledge and it needs resources. For a country that is blessed with this amount of water, the Minister of Water Resources needs to have a budget between 5 to 7% of the total country's budget. As we speak now, the budget of the Ministry of Water Resources is under 2%. There is no way that they can actually have plans or have capacity to manage these catastrophes when they happen. As well, I found that there is a big gap, that knowledge has not been properly anchored in our academic institutions in South Sudan. The level of knowledge of the students and of the graduates and the topics that they are dealing with do not deal with the immediate needs of the people. So the problem is actually wider than the incident. The floods are an incident. The whole arena of water is really under-resourced and it needs a lot of work. But to answer your question, dealing with the suffering of the people, as UNMISS has done, as the IOM have done, as the ministry, as the embassy of the Netherlands has done, the IOM are being funded by the Netherlands. So people have come to the rescue of the victims. However, this takes time.
Yeah.
This is not the kind of thing where you bring food and distribute it the next morning. You are dealing with nature, you are dealing with land, you are dealing with 200,000 people in camps. So I will be defeating my main purpose if I do a prescription like that without actually doing the feasibility study to know exactly what is the right medicine to prescribe. Thank you.
Okay, yes, candidate Deng Majok for PhD. So what were some of the main recommendations that were raised during this 5 days public consultation?
One of the recommendations is that there has to be multi-institutional approach to these issues. For example, the Ministry of Water Resource and Irrigation and that of the Environment and Forestry, Agriculture, also roads, let's say transportation, all of those need to really work together in terms of technical capacity and building the technical capacity of the staff. The other recommendation, as already been mentioned, which is that we need to approach even environmental social impact assessment through evidence base before any of the work can be done, either clearing or cleaning, that need to be preceded. And it is important to emphasize that when we are calling for feasibility study or impact assessment, this does not translate to no work on the Nile. It's just saying that in order for us to avoid some other future consequences that could result when we rush into the decision and come up with technical work, we need to be able to account for the future changes in climate changes in the waters in the Nile. And the best way to do that is to do a study and then know exactly where there is a blockage, know exactly where we need to remove the pattern and where that need to be deepened and where that does not need any deepening. This has to be to proceed with that. The other recommendation that come out is that South Sudan has zero water facilities as we speak. So the renovation of Fula Dam on the border of Nimuli and Uganda was also one of the things recommended. As far as the study, we are recommending this as studies that need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
The other studies is on the artificial lake that can be in the triangular area of Upper Nile State, Jonglei State, and Pitbull administrative area. And this artificial lake can be series of one, can be one or three or two, depending on the studies that need to be done. There is a depression there. There is a clear catchment, even as far as eastern Equatorial State. There are rivers going to that run down that direction. We have the rain from the Boma Plateau that has run off to that depression. So artificial lake is actually man here in conceptual state to capture water from the rain and from the local terrain. Those are some of the recommendations that came up. Also on a short-term basis, mm-hmm. we recommend that relocation of the affected population to higher ground is a key. And this is not to say that these people are leaving their places or ancestral land. It is that in crisis like this, you have to have temporary solution. And when we talk of investment, again, we hope that the government of South Sudan play leadership in terms of ensuring that the humanitarian agency and the humanitarian Ministry of Humanitarian as well as Ministry of Water and Environment all come together to ensure that this population have food to eat, this population have mosquito nets that are enough shelters, and that this population is taken care of in the meantime.
Yes, before we hear from Professor Mo on the visibility studies, whether it will lead to a solution or not, so let me find out from you, Mr. Deng. You followed this debate so keenly on social media, I'm very sure, and also in public places. What do you think was the major fears of those people who are debating, those who are for and those who are against?
Those who are or were for dredging, I suspect the fear is that they believed, again, this goes to perception, that people are not caring enough for those that are right now dealing with flooding, and that their asset has been destroyed, cattle have been destroyed, they cannot farm. And so when people say no dredging to these people, it means that people are not showing much empathy or sympathy
with them.
With them. So that's probably one main perhaps perception or argument from those who say that there must be dredging. For those who say no dredging, the fear is that we have machines, every machines and equipment are in the country of South Sudan. Apparently, the entire government of South Sudan, if not, maybe 90% of the government of South Sudan was not aware that machines were brought to the country. And based on the bill of lading that we have received, these are huge equipment. And then they were brought in from Egypt, Ministry of Water and Irrigation, to Egypt Ministry of Water and Irrigation within South Sudan. So that you look at Egypt as a country, they may have done research, but brought their own equipment, brought their own operators. So the idea that a foreign power is here in the country overseeing its own project 100% from the inception planning to now almost implementation, that quickly really send a serious signal to those who say no dredging, because they see that as, so to speak, not a good relationship between two countries, and that the project is not reflecting mutual interest and is not reflecting the sovereignty, the right of the sovereignty of South Sudan.
Right. Yes, Professor, would you like to add maybe to share with more listeners before our lines are open, really, what were some of the fears of the two parties to this debate?
Let me first, if you don't mind, let me add a little bit more on what can actually be done, because this is the crux of the whole thing. We have the problem. How to deal with it is now the main issue. Learning from the experiences of other nations, we are not the only nation in the world where floods have inundated our lands. So what did the others do? And that's available. It is available for anyone who is interested. Another regrettable thing is politicizing the issue. This has gone into the party politics. It has gone into the divisions between the party politics. And that inflamed the feelings of people, and I think that was a strategic mistake. Improve the capacity of the ministries that are concerned with these things. I mean, you cannot have 2% of the total budget going to a ministry like water resources, while the international standards are between 5% to 15%. Another one is to look into the man-made obstacles. There is now concrete evidence that quite a bit of those floods that damaged people's lives were not really nature-made, but were actually man-made. That there were structures that were built, constructed in the natural waterways of the rains when they come, stopping the rain from going into the river rather than the river bursting its banks. So we have got to call a spade in that area. We also need to establish a rapid response capacity, so that instead of calling on the Dutch or calling on IOM or calling on this organization, we have our own in-house national rapid response measures. And the last one is the whole world builds dikes, but dikes are not heaping dust and maram and just putting it high up. It is a structure, it's an engineering structure. It has got to be done right. Otherwise, it will be wiped out in the Paris rain. So there is quite a bit that rests with our government, with our leaders, to do in that area. Thank you.
Yes, still, Professor, suppose these visibility studies are done, and are there any chances of either choice of dredging or not dredging? So maybe or the two can be combined together to make a compromise. So, from your expertise, and you have been reading a lot and you have written a lot, you have done a lot in this field. So what do you foresee?
The big question that comes up immediately, dredging for what? And dredging to what depths? And dredging for what objective? And dredging and mitigating the possible unintended negative impacts of dredging. For argument's sake, if I dredge in Bantio, or I dredge in Wau, or Siwa and Busari, what is going to happen downstream? I have got to understand that. I don't want to take the trouble from one community and put it in another community. What have I done then? So really, we have got to classify things. Let me give you an example. The River Transport Corporation started operating in 1913, more than 100 years. All they needed was what we call a draft or a depth in the water of 1.2 meters, 4 feet, that's it, 120 centimeters. Anyone who wants to dredge just 120 centimeters, they can go ahead tomorrow. Everybody will be smiling. What we are worried about is deep dredging, because two of these machines that were brought by the Egyptians, they have an arm of 12 meters.
12 meters?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is in the record. I have got the record. I have got the bills of lading. So it is not the principle of clearing. So
what is the maximum meters for dredging? Is it 10, 15?
We heard that to start with, the government of South Sudan and the South Sudanese people don't have any leverage or control over the Egyptians or the equipment right now. It is a cubicle.
So they will not know what happens?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The equipment came in trucks. It came with drivers. It came with supervisors. We don't know what is going on whatsoever. This is a national security issue. It is no longer a matter of water or equipment. So if you want to dredge, you need to qualify dredging for what. We hear that dredging is for navigation, 1.2 meters. That's all you need. That's all you need.
Not go 12. And dredge.
Sorry, go ahead.
Not 12 meters, like you mentioned.
No, not 12, not 4, not 6. And it has to be studied.
When it is 12, what is the impact?
The impact is that you are going to affect the bed of the river. The small animals on which the fish feed will be affected. The incubation period where the fish lay their eggs is going to be affected. You may drain water from the sides and then you have a pond rather than a river, so you might impede the flow of the river. But all that can only and only be determined if a proper feasibility study by qualified people who are not biased is done up front.
So talking about the feasibility studies, how long can it take for the feasibility studies which has been commissioned by the government now to take? How long?
There are stages. We don't have to go into feasibility study from day one. There is what we call reconnaissance. If, for argument's sake, if tomorrow His Excellency the President or someone asks me to go and review the engineering part, that's my specialization.
Mm.
From the reconnaissance, if I am there for 4 or 5 days, I can give some initial advices. I can give a sense of direction. After the reconnaissance, there is what we call pre-feasibility. Pre-feasibility is that you go a little bit deeper. You do more research, you get more scientists, you have more resources, and we can tell the government, look, this is how the problem looks like. These are the possible areas for more research. Only then after that we go into the feasibility study. For that continuum, if we are starting with reconnaissance, until we finish the pre-feasibility to give the government a solid idea, it is probably 4 to 5 months. If we want to do a complete feasibility study for Bahr al-Ghazal Basin or for Sobat Basin, it will probably take a year to 18 months. And the cost of a full feasibility study for either of the two basins is probably about $200,000 to $250,000.
If you have just joined us right now, you are listening to Nationwide. I have two guests with me here who are right now. You can call and ask your question on the issue of water resource management in the country. I have with me Professor Taj Al-Kazini and Mr. Deng Majok Chol, who is a PhD candidate, sitting with me here. Our lines are 0912062079 or 0912062950. Send us a short SMS to our SMS number 0912177141. My name is Sani Martin. Hello, Redimira.
Yes, Redimira.
Good evening.
Evening to you.
Your name?
You are connected to community advisor Akokanyangkog in Bor.
Akok from Bor. Go ahead.
Yes, I appreciate the two guests in the studio for the exception that there is no cleaning of the river. Because since 1952, there is a disaster like this, but the river was not clean, and they have gone. But today it came, and it will go. So I thank those two guests. Mine is appreciation.
Okay, thank you so much, Kwok from Bortan. 0912062079. Hello. Hello.
Hello,
yes, your name.
Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Guy Kwan from Benting.
Your name once again?
Guy Kwan from Benting.
Okay, Guy Kwan. Guy, go ahead from Benting.
Guy Kwan, fine.
Okay.
U-A-N-Y.
Okay. Yeah. Guy, go ahead.
So, I have a question.
Mm.
Who is the first citizen should be forbidden by the government from the disaster? From the disaster, my dear brother.
Okay.
Are you hearing it?
Yes.
And then secondly?
Your line seems to be breaking down. Maybe can you repeat your question again?
Now, I say that who is a first class citizen should be forbidden by the government, should be forbidden by the government.
Okay.
That is my first question. And then second question, the dry season and the flood. Season, which season can displace the more civilian than each other?
Okay. 0912062079 or 0912062950. Those are all our lines. You can call and be part of our discussion this evening. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, your name?
Good evening. You are talking to Ustad Luka Konagawa, Dr. John Graham Memorial University of Science and Technology in Bor.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I have two questions and others come on also.
Okay.
Because these brothers who are there now in the studio, they are expert. But now we see this dredging of the canal, river canal on Nam River. It's so important now. The question is, why is it so important for some of the leaders in government to put dredging first as their top priority in the country? Okay. And now we have what we call peace in the country, and then they need now to divert the peace. And the peace will be the first to implement it. Another one also, I think, the dredgings have advantage and disadvantage. As I said now, what is the disadvantage and what is the advantage of dredging? Because dredging now can have serious and long-lasting negative impact on the environment. For example, now it can damage or destroy peat, the swamp, ground, yes, and lake, river, bank, and unstable. It can still be sustainable in the river now, lowering oxygen level.
Okay.
So I hope this effort, there are better people now to tell us what to do in the country for this
Thank you so much, Luca, for that. Two questions, the merits and the demerits of dredging, and also why is it that the government want to consider this issue of dredging a top priority despite other priorities? 0912062079. We can give time now together with this SMS question coming from Yach Garang Akot in Awil, and he says, Professor, do you think, I'm trying to reframe his questions, do you think the heavy machines brought from Egypt is the major fear of the people of South Sudan, and they were going to go beyond the maximum required meters of 2 rather than going for 12 or 15 or even more than that, or 50 even, for their own interest? So that's a question from Yach Garang Akot in Awil, asking about the conception of the Egyptians. Says it's not very clear because the government is not serious. Our resources will be all grabbed and we shall lose so many. Yes, let's take the issue of the first one from Yach to Professor, and then Mr. Deng, you will look at the advantage or disadvantage of dredging. Yes, Professor.
Right. Can you very quickly just repeat the question I need to address?
Yes, the fear. Many South Sudanese fearing the heavy machines brought by the Egyptian government to the country that can cause a lot of damages in terms of resources.
Right. My concern should not be the equipment itself.
Mm-hmm.
My concern should be, what will the equipment be used for? What kind of control and supervision will our government put in place so that they make sure whatever activities these machines are engaged in are only in the interest of the people of South Sudan, and only to execute a planned approach to help the people? So the problem really is the fact that this control is not there, this supervision is not there. A memorandum of understanding, Muzakira Bita Tafahum, was signed between the Ministry of Water Resources and Egypt. A shameful agreement was signed. It infringes on the sovereignty of South Sudan as an independent country. So there is a lot for us as South Sudanese to fear. In normal circumstances in other countries, the supervision of such operations, when you bring a contractor who is dealing with the natural resources of the country, it is the engineering corps of the army, of the national army, who should be doing the supervision.
Yes.
So if tomorrow His Excellency Salva Kiir Mayardit says, I am commissioning the engineering corps of the South Sudanese People Army to supervise the operations, I have no problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, and quickly to the, should the issue of dredging the Nile be a top priority right now, given some of the huge challenges we are facing? Professor, once again.
No, not really. Not really. But we have got to appease and support the people who have been affected. We cannot leave 200,000 people in the camps, looking at the river every morning, listening to what is happening in Juba, And these guys, they need assistance.
Yeah.
They don't need words. They don't need politics.
They need action.
Absolutely, they need action. So as long as we do that and patch their wounds and comfort them and inform them of how intricate the situation is, leaving them alone is not the right thing to do. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, the issue of the advantages and disadvantages, could you maybe briefly explain?
Yeah, some of the advantages, and this was well presented during the public consultations, include, for example, if there are vegetation that have grown in the waterways, either flooding or has root dipped, those one can be removed. And especially if we know what the objective is, let's say the objective is to increase the water flow, so that would be one. If the objective is for navigation, then you also look at any materials that may have gotten into the river during this long period of time when the river has not been catered for or taken care of. For example, if we have any blockage, either because of some of the infrastructure that we have built in the past, not knowing that we will have this large-scale flooding. We also look at sediment that has accumulated, perhaps, and maybe in some part of the river, it has made the river shallower, and you cannot have a boat over that. This is also, again, if the navigation is the objective. And then you also look at some of the disadvantages, some of which Professor Touch talked about, and some were talked about during the consultation. But one of them is that if it is not done properly, for example, it can disturb the ecosystem, meaning the species that really lived and incubate and multiply in this area. For example, the population of fish, the population of other animals that we feed on in the water. We also looked at the issues of food security, because when the fish population and the growth of the fish as part of the ecosystem is compromised, it means that the population that depends on fishery as livelihood, and we have a huge potential, by the way, for this fishery. South Sudan has a potential to export fish all over Africa if it is managed very well. You also look at if they dip depths, again talking about engineering as Taj mentioned, let's say they go deeper beyond 2.5.
Don't you have, we have this department in the University of Juba, are they not in position to be incorporated to supervise, or we don't have the equipment like our professor said?
This is part of what we hope that this discussion will have to be of usefulness, because one of the things we are recommending now is that academia, as well as institutions like Ministry of Environment and that of Water, realize that we have national experts and that their expertise need to be sorted out. All we need really, and this is where the international organization come in, an institution, is the institutional capacity. For example, when we talk of institutional capacity, we are talking about lab. If we want to do the soil study, we need to take that to the lab. Mm-hmm. And some of these laboratories have done this for a while. If we want to look at the database, we want to house those data that we are collecting. You also want to look at this institution that have this capacity. And then they have the training, you know, creating modules, for example. And so, yes, the engineering department of the University of Jipo and any other university in the country should really be part and parcel of this. But just to go on and say, one of the disadvantages is that if it is dig deeper, for example, then the objective is now different. If the objective is to channel water, then when you make the river, let's say from Lake No to the Sat, is dig really deeper. And also that part of the, when the Bahar Arab, which is river, key river, into Malakand is dig deeper, you will actually, in essence, be digging a canal. And you will not be talking of Jonglé Canal. The Jonglé Canal was intended to drain the site from the tail. But that whole river path from Lake No to Malakand, if it is dig deeper, like 10 feet on what, then you have, in essence, effectively created another canal that can drain the site from the nose or from the head. This is definitely saying that the water from the wetland, like the Barkazal wetland, the water in touch, in what they call swamp, will all be drained into the underground water, will be compromised, because this water is being channeled to run so quickly to go northward.
Yes, there is another question here via our SMS coming in from Mariel in Tomping here in Juba, going to Professor Taj, and he says, after this public consultation, what next? And the second part of his question is, do you believe that the people to whom you have handed over your recommendation or your resolution, will they take it serious given our past history of so many recommendations made, handed over to the government, and nothing is done about it?
Thank you very much. Before I go into that, if you allow me.
Yes.
You mentioned the academic institutions. The issue we're talking about is in the operational platform and is not in the academic platform. So the two can combine. You can take issues for the university to research it, but if you want to take decisions, you have got to move into the operational platform. The other thing that I would like to add, drainage in itself is not really a monster that people are talking about. As long as it is studied, it is measured, it is functional, it is timed, it is supervised, and it is only in the interest of South Sudan. That's our worry. Right, coming back to the question, what next?
Mm-hmm.
Let me assume that for 1 hour I wear the hat of His Excellency Professor Salva Kiir and I can make decisions as I please. The first thing I will do,
mm-hmm.
I will jack up the budget of the Ministry of Water Resources from less than 2% to 5.5% to 6% so that I give them an institutional capacity to deal with the issues.
Yes.
The second thing I will do, I will quarantine all the equipment that have arrived until...
For how many days?
Sorry?
Quarantine for how many days, how many months?
Until the proper feasibility study has been done, and until the government of South Sudan is in control and not the government of Egypt, which is in control.
Mm-hmm.
That can only come from the president. And the other thing I will do, I will probably take the plane and go down and visit the people and comfort them and make sure that their immediate needs are taken care of. We are all human beings, and the people of South Sudan are good human beings. When you extend the hand to them, they will take it. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And finally, as we come to the end of our discussion for this evening, we should keep following up with you. So, let me begin with you. What do you foresee might happen? Because like you said, now we don't know whether work is still going on or the work has been halted by the order from the president, as he mentioned on the 9th of this month. So what is your concluding remark in terms of this water management resources in the country, Professor?
We are in the final stage of presenting our written recommendations to the president. And I understood today that on Monday we will be meeting with the president and presenting the recommendations. There are certain forces, certain politicians who try to scare us, but we are invincible as long as we are...
Satin or Sati?
Next Monday.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I mean, how many politicians wanted to scare you? Certain. Certain politicians wanted to scare you.
Three or four, but we are invincible. When you have got the people beside you, you can be very brave.
Okay.
And all of us were very brave. We silenced them, and we ended the 5 days the way we wanted. We are writing our recommendations. We are brave about them. We'll present them to the president, and then we'll make them public.
Okay.
And if somebody wants to take us to jail, hallelujah for the jail. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Yes, Mr. Deng, finally.
Yeah, thank you very much. I am hopeful that the presidency as an institution will definitely act on some of these recommendations on both the short-term basis, medium-term basis, a long-term basis. And given the directive that the president indicated in his speech on the 9th of July on our independence, 11th Independence Day, it's now clear that the president has listened to science. That evidence-based approach is the way to go. And I believe that they will build on what the president has already indicated, that their council of ministers will definitely see that this is for the betterment and for the interest of the entire people of South Sudan. While we cut off for those who are affected today in Unity State, in Happen Island State, in Jungle State, and part of Lagos State, we have to have a program that will sustain this population as we look into a much more sustainable solution that will not have any regrettable consequences down the road.
So just briefly for more clarification, does your recommendation, the reports are going to present to the president on Monday, does it support the idea of dredging, or for now you are stopping it until a scientific research is done?
Yes, it is very clearly, and it is again in the president's speech, that credible studies, feasibility study, environmental social impact assessment is done before any dredging is done. And this, again, as we have indicated, it is a matter of timing and priority. If the government of South Sudan, the council of ministers, prioritize this and give appropriate budget to both the Ministry of Environment and that of Water Resource and Irrigation, then it will move as quickly as possible if they prioritize it. And this process can quickly move.
Thank you so much, Mr. Deng Majok Chol. When are you graduating?
Well, I am doing my final research in terms of modeling, the climatic science and the site hydrology and data collections, and so maybe another year or two.
Okay, thank you so much. We wish you all the best, and we shall be waiting to hear from you very soon. And that was Professor Taj Al-Kazimi and Mr. Deng Majok Chol here with me in the studio. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much. Appreciate
God bless you.
The news is coming next in English at the top of the hour. Join me after the news for the second hour of Nationwide. Good evening.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Mirai.